So good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming. Before we start, quick show of hands poll, please. How many of you are using cloud storage today? Ah, fantastic. And how many of you who are not are interested in or thinking about using cloud storage? OK, so fantastic. And the good news is, no matter what your answer, you've come to the right session. So thank you very much for being here. Before we dive in, I want to kind of go over a slate of storage-related talks that we have coming up over the next day or two. So depending on your interests, we would love for you to show up for those as well. You're currently at the first session, which is BRK2201. We're going to provide an overview of Azure Storage and also talk about solutions. Back-to-back with this one, so it's over in B with about a half-hour gap, but we definitely encourage it's worth the trip. There'll be a deep dive session on object storage. So if you're particularly thinking about doing an implementation with object storage or developing against it, one of our other program managers is going to give a really fantastic deep dive there, also with partner and customer case studies, just as in this session. Tomorrow, we have a session for those of you who are maybe more focused on IaaS deployment cases, going over disks, VM use cases, premium storage, as well as files, which is our managed SMB service. So that one is tomorrow. And then, of course, regardless of what implementation you're looking at, security is always an important topic. And we have a talk focused on that as well coming up on Thursday. So please, by all means, come and check them out. And we have some cards printed up front, if you like, after the talk. It has some information both on these talks, some of our partner resources, and other links that can help you be good references for Azure Storage. In terms of what we're going to cover today, first we'll go over kind of a brief overview. What is Azure Storage, right? Storage is kind of a very broad concept, so we'll spend some time kind of illustrating the benefits and the capabilities of Azure Storage. And then we're going to dive into solutions. John Lovell, who's my co-presenter, is going to do an overview on storage solutions. And then we'll focus very quickly on two key use cases. We've got some really great guest speakers from some of our partners who are going to take us through some specific customer use cases to illustrate some of the things that customers can do with Azure Storage and some of our partner solutions. So one last question. How many of you are tired of the game or the business of trying to forecast, predict, or plan your storage, right? Capacity management, trying to figure out what it takes to keep your business healthy. I kind of view that as like a lose-lose proposition, right? If you're doing capacity planning, you're either going to buy too much or buy too little, right? It's almost impossible to get it entirely right. And that's one of the general challenges that exists in the state of sort of traditional or current on-prem storage today. Number one is scalability limits, and that ties to how much uncertainty you have to deal with, right? So one is, do you even know or can you even predict what your business is going to do over the next year or over the next 2 years, right? And then if you have a very long capacity planning life cycle, what you have to buy, what you have to deploy, and what it takes to support your business and not constrain its ability, right? So question is, you know, how long would it take you if you needed another petabyte storage? How quickly could you get that, provision it, and spin it up? Or, it's not just for the petabyte scale, on the small end, if your capacity is currently full, how much nuisance or difficulty is it even to get the next terabyte of storage? You're going to have a purchasing event, rack and stack, and deploy some gear, right? So how do you get out of that business? Or if you have capacity that's no longer required, right, or you had to migrate a data set to some, you know, cooler form of storage, can you do that in place? Or what are the costs or ramifications if you have to decommission capacity, right? These are all things both in the scale up and scale down that are problematic with the traditional model of storage today. That being said, there is the element of risk management, right? Your data is one of your most precious and most valuable and most important assets to your business, right? So you cannot put it at risk. And there is always kind of what I call the golden rule of storage, right? Which is you can't lose the data, you can't corrupt the data, and you can't mess up the data, right? So anytime you're looking at an alternative solution, that's always sort of tempered with the risk management of, is this a trustworthy infrastructure solution that's going to let me deploy my data and protect it adequately? And then additionally, there's the elements of cost, right? So beyond some of the things that I mentioned, right, there is the opportunity cost of constraining your business, right? Being someone that prevented, you know, the ability to deliver new revenue because you didn't have enough capacity. But there's also things, it's maintenance, it's migration, it's the constant upkeep that doesn't really add value to your ability to unlock data or do something with it. And then there are big events that can happen. So, you know, if you're within your current data center footprint, that's great. But what happens if you have to expand to a new region or enter an entirely new geographical region? What are the costs associated with doing that, and how can you avoid that and make it seamless? And so the net is that all of these factors together conspire to hold you back, right? It's a tax or a burden. You know, storage should be, again, an asset that helps you utilize your data, not something that prevents your business from being agile or utilizing the data or being able to move forward. And so to that end, Azure is built on sort of four core pillars that we'll go through and we'll illustrate how these can help you. One is the ability to scale limitlessly. Two is the element of trust, right? Is this a trustworthy infrastructure provided by a reputable vendor that can truly meet your needs and support your business? The economics of cloud and how that addresses some of the things that I just went through. And how do you put all of those things together to unlock agility for your business and also free up your resources to do more valuable things? And again, in some of the case studies that we'll go through, it'll illustrate how customers actually achieve those things using solutions built on Azure Storage. So first element is the element of scale and geo-reach, right, capacity. And it's the ability to instantly grow, right? So the greater the elasticity and the shorter the lead time that it takes you to be able to get new capacity, the less you have to plan, forecast, and live in this rigid model of having to do large capacity purchases, right? You can basically instantly grow capacity for what you need, as much as you need, where you need it, and when you need it, right? That's something that you cannot do today in a traditional model. Azure foundationally basically has, for all practical purposes, nearly infinite capacity, right? So today we have over 120 trillion objects stored in our infrastructure, and we transact on average over 19 million transactions every second, right? And for those of you who are here last year who have followed us, if you look at the numbers that we posted up last year, it's more than doubled year on year, right? So again, the capacity is effectively bottomless, but we are aggressively continuing to invest in the infrastructure, grow the reach, and grow the capacity. Right? And we are constantly taking on new customers every month. So as you can see here, we're growing over 100,000 new subscriptions every month, people that are onboarding to Azure and doing new things with it. So reach. Reach is really important. And I think, again, in the matter of your data being very important, it's about reach, but it's also about control and trust, right? So one of the unique offerings that we have is our government and our sovereign clouds, right? We've erected a construct that uses a combination of legal framework and technology to secure, in some cases, legally isolate the data that's in another country according to their sovereignty, residency, and rule of law requirements. And so what that lets you do is if you have cases where, you know, based on the region you're operating in or your customer requirements, it's a very high level of control over that data for regional requirements while still maintaining the same consistent set of technological services available, right? We also offer Azure Stack, something that's unique in any hyperscale storage provider, right, which lets you deploy an Azure consistent experience back into your on-premises data center. Now, I just spent a whole lot of time explaining why the ability to use the Elastic Public Infrastructure is a good thing, but if you have invested in a deployment and you do have selected cases where that needs to be in a very tightly controlled physical infrastructure, you can do so seamlessly and preserve all of your investments and preserve the same workflow and deployment model. And finally, the element of regional coverage. So to build a little bit on some of the facts and figures that came up in the keynote, I think Scott already mentioned that our regional reach and our penetration in different geographies is already twice that of the next competitor, who is the largest overall vendor. But what he did not mention is actually our year-on-year growth in geographical reach outstrips their entire existing footprint in its entirety, right? And so that underscores the fact that this is an extremely core and critical area of investment and something that we believe is strategically important to us. And the reason for that is that we want to be able to be and be able to place your data wherever you need to be and wherever your customers require, right? So we actually had some customers and some folks come and visit us in our booth yesterday and say, you know, our company is looking to expand into a new region, right? And that's a use case where, again, public cloud storage and Azure is really powerful, right? So versus having to break ground or maybe establish a new presence in a geography, right? Or make an investment or set up colo space, right? You can seamlessly set up a new presence in another region, whether it's next door or around the world, just as easily as you do in your own existing deployment today, right? It's very, very seamless. Geographical reach is about being able to put the data where you and your customers need it to be. Now, beyond that, it's also about diversity and risk management. So you can deploy workloads in a geographically distributed fashion to maintain availability or use redundancy to ensure that your data can survive region-level disasters, right? Which is something that's very difficult to do if you only have a single data center, right? So opening a second site, DR site, or spreading your data geographically is frequently very cost prohibitive. And that's something that geographical reach can help you do in managing your data. So trust. As I said, golden rule of storage, don't lose the data. It's probably not sufficiently well known just how durable and resilient public cloud storage is. So the durability, to say it's extreme is not an understatement. For Azure storage, the combination of our multiple copy replica protection and strong consistency results in a level of data protection that is equal to or greater than the RAID-based schemes or other data protection schemes that you're using in traditional on-prem storage, whether it's JBOD or RAID array or traditional enterprise array. The multiple copies and strong consistency is equal or superior to that. Also very important is ongoing and consistent data integrity protection, right? So full checksumming, redundancy checking, and ongoing background scrubbing, all of those processes to make sure that your writes are landed correctly, that you do not have silent data corruption, that you do not have bit rot or data loss over time are things that our infrastructure is constantly doing to protect your data, right? And if you're using just, you know, a bunch of disks in an array or a server somewhere, that is a level of protection that you may or may not have for your data today. Again, tolerance over regional disasters, right? So the ability to replicate the data between centers that are hundreds of miles apart, right? So if that next superstorm Sandy hits or from the West Coast, hopefully the big one doesn't hit, right? The ability to protect your data and maintain availability and integrity through that is very, very important. And then finally, security, right? So data at rest encryption, as well as a number of security measures and an infrastructure that can defend your data against attack is also extremely critical. Also is trust, right? So if you're going to make any big purchase or investment decision, you're going to read your reviews, you're going to do your research, and you're going to make sure that that your provider is someone who's reputable. So number one is trust in enterprise, right? I mean, that's something that that's been long a core part of the history and pedigree of Microsoft that we're very proud of, is the relationships that we have in the enterprise and the fact that we're deeply penetrating the enterprise. And you can see there the number of the Fortune 500 that are using Microsoft Cloud. And that is not to say that Azure is only for the large enterprises, but it sets the bar in terms of the standards that we have to meet to be able to support our customers. Next is validation by industry analysts. So we talked about the Gartner Magic Quadrant numbers at a high level yesterday. It's important to note that for storage specifically, Azure storage is recognized as a leader in the Gartner Magic Quadrant. It's one of now only two, so that field has thinned and our position moved up and to the right year on year. So in its own right, Azure storage is a leader recognized by third-party analysts. But more importantly, it depends on your deployment model and what you're trying to do, right? Storage does not exist in isolation. It's part of an ecosystem or solution of things you're trying to accomplish. And so then on some of the other magic quadrants, we are the only public cloud provider that is also recognized as a leader in the infrastructure as a service space, right? Again, only one of two. We increased our leadership year on year. And then finally, enterprise platform application as a service, right? So we are the only provider in all three of these quadrants, which are the most three prevalent models for deploying cloud storage today. And finally, the compliance coverage. And again, we went through this some yesterday, but I think it's important to note that in order to achieve and to maintain these certifications, we're constantly audited, scrutinized, tested, and maintain a certain level of standards. And this is about, again, us making those investments so that you're able to meet the requirements of your customers or the industries in which you're operating and which your data is needed. Cloud economics. So again, back to the first points. Don't put your business at risk by being constrained, right? And then don't overbuy and overinvest in your infrastructure by buying for the peaks and having too much capacity for the times when your business isn't as much. And that's true for both your workload at a compute level, but can also be for storage. So one of those sort of powerful one-liners that I've heard in terms of the power of the public cloud storage and of Azure that you can't do with a traditional infrastructure is, you know, you can have a terabyte for 100 days, or you can have a server for, you know, 100 days, but you can't have 100 terabytes and 100 servers for only one day, right? So if you have burst workloads or things that you need to do on demand, that you need to be able to provision instantly and in an unknown fashion and tear down, that is something that you can only do with a public cloud infrastructure. And you only have to pay for what you utilize, right? You don't have to buy the capacity to meet your peak demand and watch it sit idle and wasted during the rest of the year. The other really important factor is that you always realize the current market price for your storage, right? So when we decrease our price, that's instantly passed on to you, and you are from that point forward seeing that price in all of your data in place. When you buy storage in a traditional fashion and you put your data on it, you've locked in the price for that entire life cycle and for that depreciation cycle, right? So the next time you get a price break is 3 to 5 years later when you refresh the array and you migrate the data off the old array onto the new array. That's the only time you actually get a price break on that data. Speaking of migrations, that's one of the other things, is how many of you love doing data migrations? Every 3 to 5 years, it's like, you know, it's like cleaning out the rain gutters, it's like fixing your roof, it's like painting your house. You have to migrate the data, right? That same data, you're not doing anything new with it. It's just going from one place to the other, but you have to spend a lot of time and energy to migrate. And that is one of the benefits of a fully managed cloud service like Azure Storage, where that just happens magically and automatically in the background, right? Year after year, you can retain your data indefinitely, 99 years, and you're never going to have to do that migration. You never have to get the robocopy or call in the service or figure out when you're going to have the outage to move the workload. It just happens. We also do offer a wide range of products and tiers, right? So again, depending on your deployment model, infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, or even services built on top of Azure Storage, also multiple tiers. So we have hot tiers, we have things like premium storage, which is flash-based, standard tiers, which are based on magnetic disk, and also cool, which is for capacity retention that is not necessarily as transactionally active. We offer that flexibility and diversity of choice, and again, the ability to place those in different regions at different times. So last is hybrid and business agility. And what does hybrid really mean? I think that's a term that gets used a lot, but if you were to leave this room with a thought in terms of how we view hybrid, it's a philosophy that there is a persistent state where some of your workloads and some of your data may exist in the cloud because that's the right thing and you can achieve the benefits there. But in some cases, you will choose to retain workloads and retain data on premises because that's also what makes sense for your business. Or you may need it in edge locations, or some cases you may need to centralize. It's also about recognizing there's a persistent state across the ecosystems of solutions that you have today, right? So I'm sure that on the one hand, hopefully some of the things that I've talked about sound great, but at the same time, you're like, I can't re-architect my entire environment. I can't get rid of all my existing workflows. I can't retrain all of my staff instantly, and I can't suddenly turn into an entire team of DevOps and rebuild everything in the cloud just to use these benefits. And so it's about reaching forward from existing on-premises investments, from core ISVs, and offering cloud-based solutions that can help you start that journey incrementally or transformatively. So we believe that it's a persistent state that exists across on-premises and in the cloud and across a variety of delivery models, be that IaaS or PaaS, and that you should have the ability to move your workload seamlessly and mobilize your data across those locations and deploy tiered storage solutions as needed to get the best economic benefit at any time. So as it relates to choice, we believe in fostering and supporting a rich ecosystem of ISV partners whose technologies we mutually enable, and you'll see examples of that over the course of this talk. Again, Azure Stack is unique and very core to this belief that if you make the investments and you've developed against the Azure experience, that you can also bring that back to you and control it in your data center as needed. So you can basically create your own regions as well with full control, but with investment protection for the things that you've already done in development. And the ability to support you across the range of services. It's not one size fits all. It's not all IaaS, lift and shift. It's not all born in the cloud PaaS. It's not all services. But it's whichever one makes sense for whatever project you have going on in your environment. And so that brings back again to the point of leadership. We are truly and decisively unique in the breadth of services in which Microsoft is recognized as a leader. And the reason this is important is whichever product, whichever entry point you decide to take for Azure Cloud and Azure Storage, wherever you go in that journey, we offer the technologies, the intellectual property, and the capability to support you through that across a wide range. No one else has this breadth. No one else has this level of history in terms of working with enterprises to solve solutions together, and no one is as broadly recognized for that as Microsoft. So a lay of the land, what exactly are these Azure storage services I've been talking about? We do break them out sort of broadly into the two deployment models that they support. Infrastructure as a service, where you kind of look at the traditional core components of an IT stack, storage, VMs, and networking. And then platform as a service, where these are typically sort of new applications developed against a cloud infrastructure. On the IaaS side, two core offering that we offer, what you'll hear us call as disks, which are basically the persistent attached disks supporting virtual machines in Azure. And we offer two flavors. One is the standard, which is based on magnetic media, and also, more importantly, the premium storage, which is flash-based for high-performance workloads and low latency. And then we also offer the file services for a very familiar experience, presenting cloud storage through an SMB protocol, so it's a fully managed file share in the cloud. For platform as a service, we basically have three core offerings. The object storage, which is probably the most widely used. It definitely has the largest gross capacity footprint. We'll talk about that foundationally in some of the solutions later today. But again, I encourage you, if you enjoyed this talk, please hustle over after the next half hour, and Vamshi will do a deep dive on developing and some of the core patterns in terms of actually developing against objects with use cases and specific examples. And then two other offerings that we have are tables, which is for structured and semi-structured data. It's our key value store, NoSQL. And then also queues, which is our messaging service. And again, these are all built on the same foundation. So they share a common hardware infrastructure, a common code base, and all of the foundational capabilities that I've spent the last few minutes sort of outlining are shared across all of these different services, right? So it's a unified foundation that provides a diversity of endpoints and personas to, again, help you meet your needs. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to John to go into the solutions piece.
Hello, thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, John.
So Andrew and I are both on the Azure engineering team that bring you the Azure storage features. And as part of that team, we get drawn into a lot of customer conversations. And so everything's new in the cloud storage. So one of the things that are interesting is to hear what actually the customer's reactions are, and we'll match probably a lot of your reactions. So the most common reaction we get talking to a customer facing the cloud, confusion. The most common ask we get from that customer is a recommendation. There are a lot of new things happening in the cloud. There's new technology. There's new architectures for the solutions. There are new economic models, CapEx, moving to OpEx. A lot of stuff is different. One of the things we find that's not different is the customer is looking for a solution to their business problems. That is the same. And in some sense, that's the thing I think that's best suited for us in the cloud. One of our differentiators, as Andrew is pointing out, is our history of enterprise solutions. It's in our DNA. This is something we've done all along. And so when you look at the solution spectrum of the cloud, this is a way to look at it. Every opportunity brings a dilemma. And so in this case, typically what the customer will be saying is, I understand the benefits of the cloud. I've heard about it. In fact, interested in migrating. Like a lot of you that raise your hands, you're here for a reason. You're interested in seeing what the cloud can bring. But you're not exactly looking for something where you can give up a lot of what your requirements are. And this is the notion of an enterprise solution. You want to start the journey, but there's a few things that you have as kind of your business requirement. You can't simply replatform everything. You can't redesign how you do your work overnight. This is a journey. It's not something you can simply flip because the cloud is cool, because you've heard the cloud can bring savings, so why not bet the farm? It's just not the way anybody does business. At the same time, part of the farm are your on-prem investments. You have software you're invested in. You have practices. You have hardware. These are all things that you're going to continue to have and have to get value out of. So a lot of the question ends up being, great, it all sounds good, but where do we go from here? And so when we look at Azure Storage and what you've heard from Andrew about the services we offer, a lot of details, and I'm sure this is the kind of presentation that you've heard in general about the cloud and cloud storage, but also from us in the past. What we're now looking at is more along the lines of where we have been in the enterprise space, which is really what we're talking about in terms of value is Azure Storage is great. All the great features that Andrew mentioned are there. You've heard about them. You're probably interested in getting it, taking advantage. But the idea is the solution is based on an ecosystem of partners. The same way it was built in Windows Server, the same way we've been selling solutions and you've been using solutions for years. And so that's kind of the message here, is that the idea is there is overall a lot of technology, there's a lot of new architectures, but bottom line, the focus really needs to be on how do you get a job done? How do you actually implement? And so that's some sense what we're talking about in this session. Looking at storage from that lens and looking at it from the point of view of customers like yourself. So that's what we'll be spending some time on now. So there's two basic areas where we've seen typically the journey, the transformation to the cloud starts for most data centers. The first one is backup and disaster recovery. Second one tends to be for your working data, how do you integrate the cloud into your enterprise arrays, your data storage? How do you give access to your data in a better way using the cloud? It's interesting at this point to pause and realize what we're talking about. Really, what we're talking about is the same thing in some sense that's always been true. When you're talking about your data center, there really are a few different conversations that have to take place. One is about your workloads and the operations and the jobs that you run, your processes and whatnot. And the other tends to be about your data. And typically, those are two separate conversations for actually really good reasons. You've heard it mentioned in the keynote about what data is. Data is often referred to now as an asset, which is kind of an interesting concept. It's not an asset you'll find in any balance sheet. Actually, it's interesting. I got a chance to listen to Doug Laney talk at the Veritas Vision Conference, and he was talking about his field, which he's a VP analyst at Gartner. And he's the one that coined the term infonomics. And the idea of infonomics is that there should be a way that we can better attribute economic value to data. If you think about it, in the digital age, the data is an asset. It has value. Wall Street recognizes this value. Where it's not recognized is typically on the balance sheet of any company. And there's an interesting story about how that's just been true since the 30s, and we haven't quite come to grips. His view is that sometime in the 20s, there'll be a revamping of what we consider to be GAAP procedures and the way we value companies, and data will have a way to show up on the balance sheet. But if you take that for a second as just a given, that data is an asset. And data, in some sense, arguably, is the most valuable asset of a company in the digital age. Then you can sort of see some of the dilemma here. Part of the dilemma is when you're moving your data to the cloud, you're taking one of your most valuable assets and putting it in the stewardship of somebody else, not in your premises. It's sort of the kind of thing where, okay, you might lease a building, but would you rent all your people? There's a difference when you think about data. And so it's a special conversation that exists when you start moving data around and depending on someone else to take care of it. And that's why it's so important to have a specific plan when it comes to data for your transformation. So that's what we want to focus on now. Are these two key scenarios, and then some examples of how they're actually applying solutions in the real world. So first, let's talk about backup and data recovery. So for people here that are actually responsible for your IT procedures in your company, how many people here have no backup and recovery plan? No solution, nothing. Just fire all the guns at once. You're that kind of person. Anyone? Exactly. And so that's the kind of thing that faces you when you're trying to look to the cloud. One of the problems is that your requirements haven't changed. And you know your requirements very well. In fact, you can look at this list. It's the same list. You have to back up your data. You have your recovery objectives. You have your data disaster recovery issues. You have your policies you need to keep. That's still the same. Your business hasn't suddenly changed, and you aren't ready to simply make a complete change out. So what's the deal? Well, the deal is you've heard about the cloud. The cloud's great. You've heard a bunch of, just this morning, some of the key attributes of cloud storage, economics, technology, et cetera, the things you see here. Of the things you see here, one of the most interesting ones is actually that bottom one on the right. This notion of centralized data management analytics. This is now starting to get into the promise, the real promise of the cloud. You can talk about scalability, it's great. Talk about the economics, sure, that helps. But when people talk about the future and what's really changing, a lot of times what they're talking about is now you have access to your data in a way you didn't have before, which means you can now look at your data and use your data in a way you haven't before. And data is great, but you can also claim that information is what makes data valuable. And so this is, in some sense, the bigger promise of the cloud that's sort of twinkling there on the horizon. Just like they asked the question, you have some processes and tools that work. So the idea is you're not looking to reinvent those. No one is in the business of saying, you know, I'd really just rather start this morning at something completely different. It's not business realistic. And of course, and the same applies to your hardware. You have investments. You have hardware. You have licenses. You have knowledge of your solutions. And so the idea would be you want to maintain that. And a lot of times we talk about hybrid, and really that's sort of the essence of what hybrid's all about. It means you're making a journey. You're not simply giving up what you've got and moving. And so a lot of what we're talking about in this space in backup and recovery is the idea that you want to add the cloud to what you have, but do it in a way that makes sense for your business. And so we work with a lot of key partners. And so we found is there's sort of a commonality to what the cloud brings. So this is just this will sort of explain, well, how does the cloud enter into the backup and recovery picture typically these days? So basically you start out with a backup problem. You have data. You might have data on-prem. You might also even have some data in the cloud at this point. The backup is still the problem. So typically what we see is you will see the first step in terms of using the cloud is simply using it as a storage repository. There'll be some notion of saying, yeah, you can store it on local files. You can store it on across a LAN. You can now store it to the cloud. And that's kind of cool because what it does is it gives you access to your data in the cloud. You can start doing some things like thinking about disaster recovery. If you have your data up in the cloud, you can now maybe recover from it, run your workloads in the cloud. You can also recover from it, run some workloads in another premise, on premises in a different facility. It gives you some flexibility in terms of what you can do. Things that used to be difficult to do because you have to sort of set up a separate facility now can almost be trivial because the cloud kind of serves the purpose of that other facility. And the other thing that can happen as well is when you're doing backup, it's the beginning of your data migration. So some of those promises of the future, what you can do with data, depend on your data actually being up in a cloud repository. How do you get it there? Often backup is an interesting doorway to start moving your data. Because once you have your data kind of up and available as backup, that can now start to be populated as really your working data sets. So it opens up a lot of new doors. So usually the products that we're talking about in the space have some or all combination of these plugins to the cloud. It's a combination of mechanically getting it so it's using the cloud, architecturally setting it up so you can take advantage of the position of your data, and then also possibly some services associated with it that you can now do because you're working in the cloud. So here's a list of interesting key partners that we work with all the time. An interesting part of this list, you can see the names, most of which you'll recognize, are working with Azure Storage. The idea here is that we have partnerships that go back years when it comes to working with companies in the enterprise space. And so what I want to do now is introduce a partner in this space that we've been working with for some time to give you an example of that. So we've been working with Commvault at Microsoft for many years. They're an example of a company that has provided a solution in the enterprise space for a long time, and both of us are now moving to the cloud and offering the solution. So I'd like to introduce Venkat from Commvault to introduce the way that their solution has been working in this space for their customers. Venkat.
Hello. All right. Great. Hey, my name is Venkat. I'm with Commvault. I've been invited today to briefly share a customer story, a success story. And this customer I'm going to be talking about is a managed service provider. I thank Microsoft for the opportunity today to present this case study. Personally, it's an interesting journey for me because I started my career at Microsoft. I worked in SQL Server, shipped SQL Server 2005. Was part of the engineering team, then moved on to Windows Server, then moved on to Azure, so then moved on to Commvault. The case study I have has elements of all of this, so it's like a personal journey for me as well. A little bit about Commvault. How many of you know about Commvault in this room? That's a lot of people. That's awesome. So I'll probably keep this brief. So Commvault and Microsoft, they have a long-standing partnership. Commvault is a NASDAQ-listed company. It's been around for, the partnership has been more than 15 years in the making. Commvault is built from the ground up with SQL Server, Windows Server in the foundation level. And Commvault has been a Microsoft certified partner, an Azure certified partner. And Commvault's data, right? Commvault's all data. I don't know. I was trying to see what would that mean. So obviously, I have some interesting information to share in my brain. I have some speaker notes. I have some paper. So Commvault is all about having multiple copies of the data so that you have continuity, right? So I have some printouts here. I'm going to look into it, right? Commvault, in general, is the data management gold standard out there, right? We are into backup, recovery. We're into data management, dedupe. We're into indexing. We are into data management across hypervisors, across cloud, private, public, hosted, name any cloud, right? We have one platform that's unified, that's built to help customers take the journey of managing the data across technology horizons, right? Commvault has a content store that is built on top of SQL Server. And Commvault is an enterprise class, also a mid-market solution that has come to be the Gartner's Magic Quadrant leader. A little bit about the MSP we're going to talk about. Right? This company is called Innovative Systems. They're based out of South Dakota in Mitchell. And they are into software development. They are into hardware and software organic rollout to their customers. Their expertise lies in engineering, embedded systems, telephonic. They're also into providing software for customers that have utility services. So as you can see, the MSP that has connections with and customers in the area of utilities who themselves have end customers means the demand for their services and their availability is real time, right? So Innovative Systems has this challenge, right? Or had this challenge, I would say this. They were a tape-based backup company, right? Their storage needs were growing exponentially. The shrinking SLAs and the demand on their infrastructure ended up causing them to miss SLAs, ended up causing them to have a situation where DR is a little bit of a hit or a miss sometimes, right? I want to talk about their previous setup, right? Probably go back once. So Innovative Systems, they earlier had a direct attached storage environment that couldn't scale. So they started adopting Microsoft's Scale-Out File Server. That started scaling well. The challenge with that is the performance went up, but their backup windows couldn't keep up. Right? Their tape backup was slow, and oftentimes they ended up missing the tape backup windows, which means off-site retention was a challenge. They started looking at solutions that'll help their availability story. They considered Veeam. They considered a couple of other partners. They considered a couple of other competition. They couldn't scale with other competition, if you will, right? So they brought in Commvault. Commvault, Microsoft, with the long-standing partnership. We were able to see what they really needed and how they can get there. So this is what we ended up doing. With Commvault solutions, we ended up taking them to the cloud in the most resilient and most easiest possible format. We adopted Azure Cloud Storage. And we ended up moving a whole bunch of their primary storage up to the cloud. Right? At the end of the case study, turned out their tape backups, which they still continue to do as an option, are taking much longer than their cloud backup. That is how it transformed. Their investment with Azure has started paying off the minute they started moving to the blob storage. A key thing here is the tape backups took much longer because they didn't have a good dedupe technology. Right? They have about 570 petabytes of storage, and they were trying to back up all of that. Right? When Commvault got involved, and Microsoft and Commvault working together, we figured dedupe is an important part before they moved data to the cloud. So we deduped the data to a point where only relevant data got moved up to the cloud, which made things much easier. So they now have a better RTO. They are now able to keep the data much longer, and the retention period went up because the amount of data shrank. Let's talk about a little bit about what we ended up doing there, right? So we ended up taking their data and started uploading the data to the cloud, mostly Azure Blob and some cool storage. And we started also managing the Linux workloads. Commvault, as you can see, has a platform that's built for multiple operating systems, multiple platforms. Innovative Systems had some of these telephone support systems built on Linux. So they needed a platform that cared about Linux, that cared about tape, that cared about SQL Server, Exchange Server. This is where Microsoft's long-running partnership really paid off. SQL Server Exchange, we talk natively. Commvault solution talk natively. And we manage VMware solutions as well. So putting this together, we were able to orchestrate both a primary and a secondary copy into the cloud. We were able to provide DR. I have to say this is a validation that innovative solutions wanted a good DR solution. They got that. Not just that, they ended up becoming an MSP that rolled out DR as a service to their end customers. That's how the transformation happened. Some data points here. So Innovative Solutions now has 69 terabytes of data in the cloud, and they're growing really fast. And they're happy to grow. They have geo-redundancy, betting on Azure, three different regions. They're now enabled 300%. Their retention periods went up by 300%, and 90% reduction in the data that they manage. It's interesting because when you step in to go help a company, you want to look at the fundamentals of where the data is being generated, what's important, what's not, how long they want to keep the data, classifying the data, deduping the data, and working with a partner like Microsoft, understanding what storage technology they want to use, and a variety of storage technology being offered by Microsoft, all of that put together help them reduce their footprint in a way, the data that they need to retain, to about 90%, which means their RTO went up, their RPO went up. Now their cloud-based DR is a success story. They are offering DR as a service, like I mentioned, to their own end customers. That is the end of the case study. So overall, Innovative Solutions is very happy. They're continuing to bet on Azure. They're continuing to roll out services built on natively on top of Azure to their end customers. And thank you to Microsoft for the opportunity. It's been a fantastic journey. And any enterprise that's willing to bet data and DR into the cloud should consider the variety of options available at Microsoft. And happy to talk to any of you guys about that. Also, we have a booth, I have to call out to you, 1410 is the Commvault booth. Happy to talk more when you guys get a chance to stop by. Also, tomorrow there's a session where we're going to talk about cloud DR, a little bit more detail than this session. In the interest of time, I'm going to give this back to John. We have a detailed session on how a Commvault can help the journey to the cloud, the DR journey to the cloud, and that detailed session is going to be tomorrow in Theater 1. So hope to see you guys there. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Venkat. You know, that's a great example of what we were talking about earlier about enterprise kind of solutions being in our DNA, that these are partnerships that go way back prior to the cloud. And this is something, again, that kind of uniquely identifies who we are as a cloud provider, that we have our roots in this kind of space. So I want to introduce two new solutions that are coming soon. Veritas is another great example of an enterprise partner that Microsoft has a long history with, from Dynamic Disks back in the NT days to Backup Exec. It's been many years that we've been working in this space. And so in some sense, we're both actually providers that are navigating this transition to become leaders in the cloud industry. So we're working together to help you bring your problems into the same space. So the neat thing is that Veritas has been working to take their product. And so you can see, if you're familiar, how many people are familiar with the Veritas products here? Quite a few. Yeah, it's one of the leaders in the marketplace, so we're respecting that. So the Veritas approach and the way they're presenting their product, all the features and rich solutions provided there are now basically connecting to the cloud. So there's a lot of work that Veritas has done to figure out the cloud transition and to start working with customers to help them navigate the same space. And so you can see here a lot of the different attributes of moving to the cloud that we've talked about are being reflected in their product line. And so the nice thing is that coming soon, for people that are familiar with the main products, NetBackup as well as Backup Exec, both of those later this year are coming with Azure Connector support. And so you can actually go to their booth and take a look, and they're able to show you some of the stuff that they're doing with it. It's a good example of in this area for backup, a lot of times what you're looking for is a way to meet your needs where you're at and move to the cloud. And so this is another example of a real rich enterprise solution that meets your needs, but now brings the cloud into the picture in a big way. So I think that's it's an interesting development for the space. Similarly, HP, for those, they have basically a set of products that also are familiar to a lot of people in the enterprise space. Their Data Protector product for enterprise and their VM Explorer for small, medium businesses are also releasing with Azure support. And you can go to their booth here at the expo floor and get a quick demo of how that will work. So overall, you see the key thing in the backup recovery space is, just like how you didn't raise your hands, you've got something going. And the key thing about the working with the cloud is you want to basically need a solution that kind of meets you where you're at and helps you start a journey. So check into these kind of solutions. I think they're the typical way we see companies entering into the cloud migration with their data is through this window, through backup and recovery. So now the next area I want to talk about is enterprise data, basically. And how do you go about setting up a hybrid environment and then leveraging the cloud for global data access? So I'll give you a chance to go the other way this time. How many people have working data in your business that's critical to what you do? Exactly, right? So everybody has data that they're using, and everybody is now looking at how to take advantage of the cloud. So in the same sense as for backup and recovery, there's opportunities as well as problems. So just like for backup and recovery, there's a set of requirements that haven't changed. You still have performance requirements. You have access requirements, interfaces that you need to be able to use. You have your current workloads and backup. All of that kind of surrounds your data with a set of processes. And just like the first scenario, backup and recovery, you'd like to take advantage of what the cloud has to offer. All the things we've talked about, you've heard probably the cloud. Well, if it's centralized in the cloud, does that mean it's easier to share data between groups? I mean, you know, there's something about that too. And of course, the ongoing horizon point of, and once your data is in the cloud, can you do more with it? Do you have access to more analytics? Do you have access to more information processing that can extract value out of it? So all of those are there, and you'll start to see some parallels here. However, this is a case, unlike backup and recovery, it doesn't really happen behind the curtains. It affects actually your workforce today. These are things that your people are using, again, critical data to run your business. Everyone's used to what they're doing today. So you have an issue where you really don't want to have to retrain your workforce. Certainly you can't afford to do it overnight. This is the kind of thing where you have to migrate. And just like backup and recovery, you have certain assets. You have servers, you have storage. These are things that you need to be able to continue to use. So again, the hybrid approach is what makes sense. So let me take a second and then describe where does the cloud come in for enterprise data, your working data sets. So it all starts with your data. So you have file blocks access, you have block access. You might have heard in a lot of times when you're talking to about cloud storage, you'll hear about REST APIs and the need to connect over the net. So it's another interface. But in the end, what you're used to are files and blocks, and this is kind of your working data set. And there's new technologies available, but bottom line, you've got stuff. So the first application of the cloud is, well, it's a global repository. Move your stuff into the cloud, and you can now use it in many different ways. It's all consolidated. And one of the first things that allows is access. So you can say, well, if it's centrally located, you now have the ability to connect from anywhere. And what does that mean? What kind of things can you do? Well, that depends more on the kinds of solutions. So one of the ways that people make this work, and part of the solutions, is often the use of hardware on premises. The cloud doesn't mean everyone loses all their servers. Maybe they're used for a different purpose. So in this scenario, typically the servers have a role in playing, in bridging the gap for performance and latency. So if you have a working data set and you're trying to share it between different organizations, it's living in the cloud, but depending on availability, depending on network connections, you still have the problem of making sure that you can get access to it at the rates that you're used to. Your performance requirements haven't changed, right? It's simply a new architecture that can bring you some new benefits, but at the same time, you still have your requirements. So servers and edge caches are typically a way that are used to solve the performance and latency problem. Another interesting thing that can be added on top of these solutions is a global file system. And that typically means a global file lock. And this is what's the key behind dynamic data collaboration. Different teams using a file system as if it were a shared resource and having the appropriate thing happen if contention is resolved and people can basically act like it's a common pool, except the reach of that pool can be global because the cloud now has access points and bandwidth that can address a global distributed file. And of course, in the end, you can't give up your basics. And so part of what the cloud brings wrapped around all of this is a level of security. Active Directory, Azure Active Directory, encryption, these are all the basics that still apply in this space. And so this is why when you're looking for a solution in this space, you really need an enterprise caliber feature set. And a lot of that typically has always come from the ecosystem. We expect it will at a steady state going forward. So how has the cloud been applied to the space? Many different solutions. Some names actually on this space you'll recognize. Some names you may not. One of the things we found in this space about enterprise data is it's actually fairly inventive, because while backup and recovery tends to sort of have a promise for future information in terms of like what you can do with it once you've adopted the solution, in this space, it's one of the areas where you can actually start taking advantage of global access of the cloud architecture immediately. And so we have some partners that are specializing in this, where you have a working data set that uses the cloud to provide this global data access in a dynamic way that you can use right away. So what I want to do here is actually then introduce a partner of ours from Nasuni. In this case, they're one of the provider of a solution. And so we have John Capella here, who will talk you through an interesting case study of the Field Museum.
Can everyone hear me? Great. I have two quick questions, and John kind of alluded to one of them. Who here has heard of Nasuni? Oh, that's more than I actually expected. So we are a young company. We are a startup in this space. We are, when you think about Nasuni, think about solving file problems. I'm going to talk about that in a second. I have a second easier question, I think. Who here is from Chicago? Oh, that's a smaller number. I'm actually surprised by that. Okay, I'm going to try to do justice. I'm going to try to tell a story and do justice to probably one of the greatest cultural institutions of this country that's based in Chicago. And honestly, before I started Nasuni, I didn't know about them. It's the Field Museum. And as you can see here, they have a modest mission. They're preserving the world's genetic biodiversity. And they can do that through Nasuni File Services and Azure. And so I'm going to walk through this in a second. But I really want to talk about the challenges that they're facing. And part of this is about the transformation of them from a 19th century founded institution into a 21st century institution. I'm going to talk about the solution, you know, that we provide both Nasuni and Azure together. And then I'm going to talk about the benefits that they receive from that. So Field Museum, this picture doesn't do justice to it. It is a beautiful building in Chicago. It's right near the lake. Is founded in 1893. It's the fourth largest natural history museum in the world. And it is a magnificent building, walking through and seeing this collection. You know, a collection that's been around for over 100 years, 30 million artifacts and specimens in their growing collection. And it's growing because they have this kind of dual mission as both preserving genetic biodiversity, but also an academic focus. They're actually sequencing genes inside of the Field Museum. They actively go out and look to expand their collection. They do this by going around the world, and in particular, they will advocate to local governments to preserve spaces which have, you know, tremendous genetic biodiversity. So one thing that they're very proud of is the fact that they've protected millions of acres of rainforest in 2015 alone. But they have challenges. Their challenge is that they're moving from being an institution that you visit, institution that is a land-based institution, to being a 21st century institution, one in which that digital collection can exist in, you know, a preserved state. It can become digitized. That's one of the big challenges. So they have 30 million artifacts, and they're trying to categorize those and digitally preserve those. And that's a range of different file types. So when you think about this challenge and you think about how it might relate to your challenges, there's lots of different types of files that they're managing here. There's image files, there's spectrographic files, all different ways in which to capture what's in the physical world and make that digital. Second, like I said, they're actually an academic institution as well. They have genetic sequencers on-prem there. And they're creating a ton of data just by sequencing the thousands of species that they have, you know, inside of the museum. So the most recent report was about 25,000 genes from the past year alone. They're actually looking at a bigger storage problem coming forward, you know, assembling those genes together. We're talking about possibly 100x storage footprint increase from their initial sequence data. So these two challenges alone, these are a problem, right? How do I manage this explosive growth of data? How can I do it incrementally? So I'll skip ahead for a second to the size of the staff. Roger Jordanist is the CTO there. They're incredibly lucky. They've got a very, very forward-thinking CTO. And because it's a nonprofit institution, a fairly small staff.
So their staff of nine, think of them as kind of like full stack IT staff. They do everything. You know, they help run cable. They, you know, both do customer support as well as doing, you know, managing the storage platform, managing the infrastructure. It is a small organization, but think about that growing need to actually protect all the data that's coming in. This is a really, really big challenge for them. And so their mission is, how can I protect this data while growing over time? And Rob, being a very taking the best lessons from the for-profit world, knows that one of the issues there is everything has been on-prem up to this point. Everything is on-prem inside of the museum. And so the question is, how can I really protect my data if it's all on-prem there? And so he wanted additional data protection. He was looking for a way to take that data set and make sure it wasn't just preserved inside of the museum. He wanted geo-redundancy. He also wanted some ease of how to manage all the file data, both in terms of the protection of it and the storage of it. So that's how he found us. And for us, we provide an integrated file services solution. So this is Nasuni File Services backed by Azure, and I'm gonna kind of walk through this kind of carefully, talking a little bit about like what we do that's a little bit different than what other customers in our space do, but how it's all built on Azure. So think of us as providing four key file services. We provide the storage, we provide the protection, we provide the access, as John was talking about earlier, and we also provide a certain number of analytics to it as well. And this is all for files. Now, how do we do that? We have our own file system. We call it UniFS. And this is really the hybrid model that John was describing here. When you think about us as having a file system, a continuously versioned file system that is based on the object store. It lives in the cloud. So when we think about where should your files live, the files, the gold copy of the files, the gold copy of the directory, the gold copy of that file system should live in the cloud. What you have local is what you need for local performance. And so our model is the file system lives in a bunch of objects that exist in the cloud backed by Azure. But what we have on the edge are these caching appliances. And so those appliances, they can be virtual, they can be hardware. What they do is they present themselves in your environment just as a regular SMB share. So if you're going to create a file system or you create a directory inside of Nasuni, you create a volume. That volume is basically creating objects in the cloud. It's going to present itself locally as just a regular SMB share. And our magic is the fact that the appliance is taking that directory, it's taking the file structure, and it's taking the individual files. It chunks it, it dedupes it, it compresses it, and most importantly, encrypts it on the filer, and it sends it to the cloud. So what exists in Azure are a bunch of encrypted, compressed, deduped blocks of data, which when coordinated together from a filer, equals your file system. It looks just like a share. It looks just like your existing file system. And so that's the key model. The key model is, we don't believe that you should take your files, put them local, and tier them to the cloud. We believe that as soon as a file is created, it should get to the cloud. And it's the filer that's managing the local caching. So what does this allow us to do? Well, this means that if the global file system is in the cloud, you have to have some way of coordinating between multiple shared volumes. And so that's where John was talking a little bit about the global file locking. We've got a NOC there that exists in the cloud, and that's the server which is maintaining the state of file locking. We make sure that a user in site A with a shared volume to a user in site B, it looks like the same file. Why? Because we've got a global file lock in the cloud that's managing all of that. The whole snapshot process, you've got a shared volume on site A, shared volume on site B. Snaps happen on site A. How do we make sure that site B can also get the updates for those? It's a continuously versioned file system. So inside of our NOC, we're managing that versioning process. You never have to worry about that. All you have to worry about is making sure that that appliance can talk to the cloud. It can talk to the NOC, and it can talk to Azure. So that takes the storage and the protection piece. The access piece is kind of interesting for us. So we know a lot of you are looking towards like sync and share solutions. And those sync and share solutions means that I've got my files, and I'm going to put them on this whole other platform. And then at some point, I have to deal with these two copies of files. I may have to deal with two different version streams and two different audit trails. We don't think that should be the case. We think that there should be one gold copy of the file. It should live in Azure. It should be accessed through a filer, through one of these local cached appliances. And the way to get to that, if you want to, you know, get this on your mobile device, is by having the mobile device talk to one of those appliances. Those appliances could live inside of, we have it in Azure Marketplace right now. It could live, you know, on-prem and have it open to the world. But the iOS or the Android devices should be talking to an appliance, which is then talking to the cloud. And so that's how we get that level of access. So it's access between different sites, it's access across different devices, and it's this continuously versioned file system. So how did the Field Museum benefit from this? Well, you know, here we are today in 2016, and they have somewhere between 20, about 30 terabytes of data right now. They expect to get to 150 by 2018. Here's the problem. They really can't change the local footprint. They really can't, because if they were to expand their data center, they literally would be cutting into revenue-producing exhibit space. It's a beautiful museum. It's not getting any bigger. That's it. And so the amount of space that you have for infrastructure or for operations, that takes away from the museum space. So they need to expand that way without expanding the local footprint. The other interesting thing, and the challenge with nonprofits in general, but here in particular, goes back to the kind of funding model. And it goes back to something Andrew had said earlier about being able to plan for this capacity. It's a great situation here because to having something like Nasuni and having the economics of cloud storage, because you actually don't have to worry about planning for 3 years. You can do it on demand. So if a grant comes in and allows you to sequence, you know, 10,000 new species, you can do that on demand. You don't have to provision that early. And one of the best things, GRS. GRS immediately provides so much of what they were looking for in terms of data protection, right? Field Museum, local place in Chicago, you know, small data center, they need the protection of geo-redundancy. How do you get that? One single call to Azure, to GRS, gives you those 6 copies in 2 different data centers. Again, incredibly powerful. Burstable local performance. One interesting challenge is they have 500 full-time employees, but they can get up to around 2,000 when you include the volunteers or you include the interns that come in. So when we talk about sequencing all this data, they want to be able to burst out the amount of endpoints that they can actually write into. And so how can we do that? Having the ability with these virtual appliances or with the hardware appliances to be able to take on additional workloads and take on the additional throughput that would be coming in from more people. And they have 2 really challenging workloads. There's a real kind of spectrum of how you deal with files. You know, on the one side, you have really, really big files that might have to move into lots of different places. They definitely have that problem. They also have the problem of lots of little files that need to be backed up and replicated. That's also a big challenge. With Nasuni, we can handle both of those coming in. And they're all being stored as objects into Azure. Integrated data protection, so they have 1 unlimited set of version streams. They can do self-service access. Again, small IT staff, they want to make it easy for their end users, for their customers, to be able to do things like small file restore. I didn't really mention it here, but they also put in all the marketing documents, all the kind of standard office documents on here as well. And so the other, quote-unquote, like lines of business within the organization also are using Nasuni in the back end. They have the option to do self-restores. And with UniFS, with the fact that we've got this file system in the cloud, only what you need is stored locally. Only what you need is stored on the cache locally. That actually has a big effect for DRing. For us, when you DR, you don't need to bring in resident to the cache the entire metadata structure. You really only need the very, very top of it. You really need just the very beginnings of the structure that can then point to the rest of the directories. And so when we DR, we talk about just bringing a filer up, registering it with the NOC, making sure that you have access to the object store, and you are ready to go. And so DRs take a very small amount of time. And again, Rob and his team, they're also very forward-thinking because not only do they talk about DR, they actually run DR scenarios. And it's very easy to do this now with Nasuni when you have this kind of partial caching appliance on the edge. And so overall, it's really increasing the IT agility. We have things like our Nasuni management console, which provides that level of access and to be able to see this full footprint of different locations, different filers in different locations, different volumes across your entire infrastructure. It gives a logical view and a logical and physical view into your file infrastructure. We make it easy to manage those things. And I have just one other point here that I just want to end with, and the fact that when when Robert announced that he was switching over to Nasuni, he made a presentation before before most of the team. They're saying, we're going to a cloud model. So people thought, oh, my files, they're going to be in the cloud. And I think he even kind of warned people that there's caching that happens. Things are going to come in locally. About 9 months later, he ran into one of the heads of the quote-unquote like lines of business inside of the museum, and they asked him, they said, hey, when is that going to happen? I want to make sure I warn my team of this. When are we going to be, looking at our office docs, on Nasuni? He said, it happened 2 months ago. And I said, wow, that's great. It's actually felt faster. I thought you would improve something. He said, no, 2 months ago we did the switchover. And so really, like, if you think about it correctly and you think about how to, what volumes you need, where the caching needs to happen, what you need for local performance, the files can live in the cloud. The gold copy can live in the cloud. You just need local performance, and you need to size and make sure you provision for local performance. And so what this means for them is this is what their data center looked like when they were trying to create the first 10 terabytes. This is what it looked like when they were trying to build out this digital archive as well as the file services infrastructure for them. This is what the next petabyte looks like. And I'm not making a case for more dense disks here at all. The next petabyte actually is in Azure. You just need what is local. You just need those caching appliances to take on the local workloads. Thank you very much. I'm around if you have any questions after this. I'll hand over to John.
Great, and I think that's a great example of meeting customers where they're at, is that this transition to the cloud actually is about moving things incrementally to match your business. So just to kind of wrap it up with kind of what can you do about this. So reminder is storage in the cloud, it's a great technology, great new things available, but really the solutions are based on an ecosystem of solutions that you're used to. And I want to thank the partners here that came to present, as well as the partners that have products coming soon. Please check those out. But question is, what do you do now? So basically the bottom line is, understand your data, understand your workloads. The two most common ways that we see people, organizations ending in the cloud is through backup and recovery, typically the first way it happens, and then your working data sets. Lots of interesting solutions. The idea is, look at what you've got. Try to see what solutions are available that'll meet you where you're already at. We have an array of market-leading partners that are providing solutions. We're getting more as time goes on. A lot of more solutions are going to be available where you're at. Once you figure that plan out, try it. The cloud and transitioning your data is not something where you simply add a few more purchases to your standard PO. It's a new thing, which means typically this is going to involve some sort of a proof of concept. We're working with our partners to make these simpler. One of the things about the cloud is typically these can be done more of a point-and-click operation. So talk to your partners, talk to your vendors about opportunities to try stuff in the cloud and try it in your workplace and to see what happens, and then use it. Realize that this is, while it seems like a lot of detail in terms of getting an entry, it is really just an entry. Once you start using the cloud, that's when the future stuff starts to be possible. And you start to be able to reap the value of this asset that you have as a digital company, which is in your data. And so a lot of the key of the cloud is to bring you the capability of doing that, and in the future to do more of it and to extract more of this the value from the assets that you already have. We showed you some of the sessions upcoming. There's a card right here sitting on top of this list over here that actually is this list. It shows you the sessions that are happening here, gives you some links to forums and information as a feedback alias to get us, if you have random questions, you just want to sort of get our attention and the Azure engineering team. Take it, carry it with you. It has a lot of good information about it. Also visit us at the expo. So we're located over, if you walk into the expo, if you head toward the left side, you'll see the cloud infrastructure area. Azure Storage has a podium, and there's lots of people there that can answer questions about just about anything you'd like. So Thank you. I think we have, there's a few minutes left, but lunch is next. We have a number of speakers. I think what we'll do is I'll hang around here a little bit to answer your questions. Please do the survey results. Let us know what you like, what you didn't like. We're rolling out this kind of information. It's kind of new for the cloud. We think it's kind of what people want to hear about how solutions are actually working. But the only way we'll know for sure is if you give us feedback. So please take a few seconds to log in and give us your feedback. Really appreciate it. I want to thank again our partners that presented here. I want to thank the partners that are rolling out solutions to Azure Storage. And so thanks for attending, and hey, enjoy the rest of your time at Ignite.